Hello and welcome to This Week in Quality. My name is Ben Doan and I'm joined today by Simon Tomes. This is the 111th episode of This Week in Quality, previously known as This Week in Testing. A quick reminder that this is a Ministry of Testing event and therefore we intend to uphold the code of conduct that you can find on the Ministry of Testing website. This episode will be recorded and published as a podcast. So for anyone joining us on stage today, which you will be able to do so a little bit later in the conversation, please be aware of those codes of conduct and that this will be recorded. Simon, how are you doing? How has your week in quality been?
My week in quality has been great. Thanks, Ben. It's lovely to get to co-host with you today. Just having a nice chit chat before we went live. Yeah, great to catch up. It's been a good week. Yeah, it's been a good week for certificates. Lots of activity going on with SQEC, Software Quality Engineering Certificate. Looking to get some lessons out there very soon. So watch this space for that in module one. It's all happening. We've also been updating how folks can track their progress when they take a course and when they take a certificate. So a few changes going out this have already gone out this week and there's more to come. So it's always exciting to focus on people's structured learning whilst also reminding people we have like social learning, like what we're doing today. So yes, it's been cool from that perspective. How about yourself, Ben? What's been happening?
Learning all the things, Simon. That sounds fantastic. Well, I've had a fun week because last week I had a week off. So this week I've had a little bit more energy, a little bit more inspiration to jump back in. And I've had a range of different projects to be jumping in and getting on with. So I'm working both on some scale and performance testing. It's still early days, but I've been able to do a few getting my hands on with a little bit of code using the K6 framework and a little bit of prep and work getting on with the very start of a browser-based user acceptance test, what you might call an E2E test in Playwright. A good balance of a bit of release testing, a bit of automation, and a bit of coming back from holiday and picking things back up again. But yeah, pretty good week.
Sounds like a great week. Love it. Getting properly stuffed back in, and I hope you enjoyed some time off, of course. So I see, thanks to those who are in the chat, folks pointing out that episode 111, it's not an emergency, it is just important. Yes, that is, as Michael says, a bit of a UK-based joke. And Jesper points out that our next episode, 112, will be for EU emergencies. So yeah, emergency podcast, I think that's quite trendy these days in the podcast world. So this is an emergency, but not quite. It's an important podcast. I think that's how we should frame it, Ben. What do you reckon?
Well, I love that. And one of the reasons I love that is, and for those of you listening, either on the recording or live, who don't get the in joke, 111 is the non-emergency number you ring in the UK. When it's not an emergency, but you do want to report something, often something to the police. But one of the things I really love is the idea of being not important, but not urgent is where innovation comes with from.
So when
you have, and I forget what the proper name is, I'm sure someone in the chat will remind me, there are these quadrants where things are urgent, but not important, important and urgent. And you can imagine the quadrant without me saying it each line. But the idea is that the quadrant that is not urgent, but is important is where it's useful to spend your time for innovation. So I love that. It could be our innovative episode.
Let's frame it as the innovative episode based on the Eisenhower Matrix. Very cool.
Eisenhower Matrix. Yep, that's the one. I knew there was a good name for it.
I was thinking, like, who was that president that's named after? Not the unknown unknowns. That was another president that came up with that. But anyway, moving on before my brain goes into rabbit hole digression mode. So this episode, we thought, let's have a bit of a focus. So in the Motiverse, for those who have been around and have been following on the homepage and the newsletters, you will have seen that we've been releasing many conversations around quality and leading with quality. Rosie Sherry, CEO and founder of Ministry of Testing has been having wonderful chats, deep conversations with leaders in the industry. And I'm going to, for those following along live, I will share a link to the collection of Leading with Quality Conversations. If you haven't checked it out already, please do go check it out. That's available for our standard and unlimited professional members. There's so much good stuff in there. And we thought, well, let's bring some of that to the forefront. Let's take this week in quality as an opportunity to share some things that we're facing in the world of leadership, some of the challenges we're facing, some of the techniques and approaches we're taking when it comes to leadership. What does leadership mean in different situations and contexts, whether it's like individual contributor leadership or people leadership, all of those kind of things. And I thought, well, maybe we could kick things off with a very basic quiz. If you get your pens at the ready, or I should say your keyboards at the ready, if you're typing, I'm going to ask some questions and you can add your answers to the chat and then Ben and I can have a little discussion and see what happens. What do you reckon, Ben? I know this is a bit on the fly, but we thought we'd give it a try without too much prep.
Let's do it. Let's do it. And loving the chat, by the way, already discussing how long it's going to take us to get to episode 999.
Oh,
like,
wow.
That is some very valuable optimism like that right there.
Yeah, I like that. To be honest, when we got to 100, that was quite a surprise how quickly we got there. I reckon, has it been worked out?
Yeah.
Nudge has worked out that it's 17 and a half years to go. Brilliant. Why the heck not?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and maybe there are some ways we can accelerate that. Let's see.
Okay, first question, folks. And this is someone who often turns up at This Week in Quality. So the question is this. Please put your answers in the chat for those following along live. According to Gary Hawkes, why did his team rebrand from the test team to quality assurance?
Ooh, that's an interesting one. And perhaps we could stick it in the chat as well for those who want to keep it open to them.
If I have that.
If you have it ready to go. Well, if not now, well, maybe I'll set you that challenge for the next one. So they're saying they rebranded their team from testing to quality assurance?
Yeah, that's the one. Gary knows the answer. You can see him in the chat. Ready to go.
Gary knows the answer. Right, let's see how spicy we can get with this. Why did he do it? So this is a bit like, I'm going to pose some questions to the audience here rather than try and give an answer. And the first one is the fact that we're talking about a separate team that is a test team and that they're continuing to be a separate team and now they're going to be called quality assurance feels to me like it's creating more distance. So my question is, what do people feel about the implicit, there is a separate team doing testing and quality assurance? Like that assumption.
Yeah. Yeah, good one. We can see some thoughts. Judy highlighting, this would make for a good poll. Oh yeah, we could do polls in the future with Wistia and prep a whole load of polls.
Ooh.
Give options, that could help. Well, Michael Close shares so that he has a different matrix to compare salaries.
Interesting.
Nadia, because they can. Yep. Alexander shares quality assurance sounds more solid. Quality is more than just green lights from Nadia Schultz.
Right.
Well,
one I want to jump on. Yeah, quality is more than green lights. I'd love to jump on. So I think that's exactly the point. I'm hoping this is close to where Gary's team was coming from. My assumption is that what they want to do is elevate it to represent the fact that the team were getting involved in more than just testing activities and that there were other parts of getting involved in the software delivery lifecycle that they wanted to be involved in as a quality team that they felt lived outside the category of testing. Or that they were being limited or excluded from somehow because people are like, oh, well, that isn't testing. And they wanted to try and get involved in conversations that they weren't. I'd love to know if that's the right answer. I know there isn't a right answer, but
yeah,
the real answer.
With the real Gary, please give the answer. No, so the notes I have is to be more involved in prevention rather than just testing, and to avoid being siloed into conversations only about testing. Very nice.
Ooh, Gary gave me a green tick, which makes me happy and sad at the same time.
And some further...
Test case passed.
Some further... Oh, yeah, shoot, the green tick emoji replies for those following along in the chat. So just some other comments coming through on the chat. Some brilliant ones. Christine Pinto, shift perception from being gatekeepers at the end of development to being quality advocates. Stephen Newton, change a name can alter the perception and have the team included in decisions. Rosie Sherry sharing, this will make a good club discussion. So yeah, if someone wants to create a good club post on this, please do go for it. AD Stokes, negative. QA fills a backward step from testing. We can't assure anything. The positive side is more info on QA salaries, more widely known, and could get better recognition internally. Nice one, AD. Judy, maybe it's to help team shift left. Yeah. And Michael Close, does it help shift testing left, right, up and down? Brilliant. That sounds like an old cheat code on a Nintendo Super NES, but that's showing my age.
The Konami code.
Brilliant. And AD's comment, also using the word quality, is more reflective of the current direction of software testing, e.g. quality engineering. Absolutely. And Callum, a final one from Callum Pierce. I'm a junior and solo QA, but I am trying to evolve my role to apply QA to our processes in general, rather than testing development work. That is very cool, Callum. And I'm so glad to hear that. Something that has revealed itself with the first module of software quality engineering certificate is very much that. It's the quality of processes as well as products and services and the quality of systems. Oh, that's cool to hear that, Callum. I would love to maybe, if you do get the chance and you're up for it in a bit, to join the stage and share a little bit more about how you're getting on evolving your role. Zero pressure on that one. But otherwise, yeah, it'd be good to hear more from you, Callum, across the multiverse about that. That's exciting.
Good idea. So should we have one more and then should we consider getting someone on stage to help us answer them?
Yeah, let's do it. Okay, I'm just going to whiz through some options. Let's try and find a spicy one. I love a good spicy one. Right. Oh, okay. Here we go. Why does Nigel Brooks Thomas believe that testing artifacts will last longer than the application's source code?
Okay, love this one. And I love this one because I have an alternative point of view. I'd love for everyone to join in with the chat for this. My point of view is that unless there's a very good reason for meeting certain regulatory requirements, for example, that test artifacts should come from ideally two or three places. One of them is the result of automation. One of them is the result of exploratory testing. And the third is some kind of output from your observability platform, whether that is feedback from your customers or like data about your customer usage. And that all of that should live only as long as it's needed to help you make the next important decision. Right, so it should only exist for the purposes of giving you feedback you're willing to act on, because otherwise it creates drag and inertia after that point, right? It slows you down by having to manage backlogs of artifacts for the sake of the artifact. It's no longer providing value after a relatively short space of time. However, alternative point of view, it's a really hard problem to solve that you need a current and up-to-date definition of what the system should do, the system behavior, and the intended way that the system works. I appreciate that some people try to use testing artifacts, so that is things like test cases and scenarios and similar, to try and fill in for that lack of documentation on the system. What I would suggest is there are alternative ways to solve that problem. And while test cases might contribute to it, there are many other better ways to build a good model of what your current system behavior should be. And that is my spicy response to that spicy take.
All right. I love it, Ben. I love it. the kind of that point you make around only until it's valuable, it loses value. I wonder, I think of like what maybe my head is going to framing it like, what is the half-life of a testing artifact? And maybe there's a way of trying to find out, if you think of all the different half-lives of elements out there, I wonder if we could create a model around half-life and how useful something is and how long it lasts. But yeah, I love it. I love what you're sharing.
Let me introduce a second concept that's similar to half-life, which is LD50. Are you familiar with this term?
No, what is LD50?
And LD50 is lethal dose 50. So the idea is that the dose makes the poison. So an LD50 is the point at which half of people, this substance will be fatal to at that dose.
Wow.
And I'm wondering if there's also an LD50 for test cases
where
at some point half of all software projects will fail because the total number of test cases slows things down to a point where you're not shipping fast enough to allow quality to be successful.
I think you've landed on something there, Ben. That's why my mind's spinning with the opportunity to go and gather that data and to find out the LD50 for projects in different contexts, different companies and different... Oh, that sounds very cool. I love it. So let's read out some of the replies in the chat. And thank you for folks getting involved. Just to point out, Callum Pierce did come back to us and shared, currently on a mad dash to get things sorted before annual leave. Have a good holiday, Callum, if you do happen to be going away. But would love to join the stage in a few weeks. Brilliant. We would very much welcome you, Callum, to join us on stage. So we look forward to that. Coming back to the question, Christine Pinto shares, the what captured in tests is more stable than the how, the code itself. Very cool. Source code is changing more rapidly than bug reports and test plans, from Alexander Romanov. Yeah, wow. Michael Close, if AI has written the source code, it is probably impossible to inspect, so it needs to be rewritten if it fails at any point. Ah, interesting. Yeah. Stephen Newton, a good test artifact is code neutral and reliant more on workflows. And Gary Hawk shares, I think it's because the code functionality and people will be changing all the time, whereas the test artifacts will be the constant and true documentation of how the system works. Yep. Thank you, Gary. AD Stokes shares, half-life suggests it is written once, where a lot of artifacts are or should be living documents updated as knowledge is gained. That's a good point. Stephen replying, there is also the variable of the life of the product feature. And Jess, for amplifying your LD50 for test cases. Thanks, Jess, for sharing that. So I can reveal my quiz machine has given me this answer. So the question was, let's go back to the question. Why does Nigel Brooks Thomas believe that testing artifacts will last longer than the application source code? Because they describe what the product is and what it's supposed to do, which often remains constant even when the underlying technology changes. So there we go.
It's really interesting because I think that, again, and I think this is indicative of many parts of testing and quality, is what we're really talking about there is testing artifacts stepping in to fill the gap that software requirements were intended to solve, right? So if you had a system architecture and a software requirements model that was, as other people said, living document, it was able to be updated, and it gave a clear definition of what the system was supposed to do and behave, if that was a solved problem, we wouldn't need the testing artifacts to be propping it up. But in many cases, that isn't a solved problem, and it's a hard problem, and the testing artifacts end up filling in that gap. And I think that's completely legitimate. And it also speaks to all the other places where testing and quality processes often fill in for things that are otherwise missing.
Yeah, I can think of a place I had a contract at. It was a healthcare system, so highly regulated environment. There was very much an obsession with ensuring that token-based scenarios were captured for regulatory purposes. And we were running lots of exploratory-based charters at the time, but we also had to make sure these scenarios were checked off. The case for them, whether we disagreed or didn't, was that we need to document this stuff because it specifies how the system and the product should behave, what it's supposed to do.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah.
I have one more thing to say on this before we move on, and that is, I think sometimes we over-focus on what the system should do based on our assumption of what we want the system to do before we build it, and not enough on capturing good data and metrics on whether the thing that it is currently doing is valuable to our end users. So I think that the reason I think it matters less that we have endless predefined software artifacts like test cases and test plans that are telling us how the system should be is because we should be getting more feedback on whether how the system currently is actually solving the problem. So that is the alternative, is much, much more feedback from the system. Because let me give you a very quick example. If you have a test case or a test artifact that describes how the system was designed and in some great amount of detail and what the system is supposed to do, and then you deliver that to your users and it's rubbish, the test case passed, and it will always continue to pass, but the system still doesn't actually deliver any of the value you wanted it to. Now, yes, okay, you could get into the semantics of, well, you need better test artifacts or you need to keep updating them. Fair. That's not without its fairness. But I'd much rather get to that feedback of, did we deliver the value quickly, than did we get to 100% tests passing quickly?
Absolutely. Deliver the value quickly. I love it. That could be the tagline for today's episode so far. That's great. So, Ben, shall we get some folks up on stage and find out a bit more about some of their leadership challenges? And I've got a nice segue into this. There's one more question. I'll just give the answer straight away. But it was to do with, based on Jenny Bramble's Leading with Quality conversation, the question was this: why did Jenny Bramble find moving from a director of quality to a director of engineering title emotionally difficult, but ultimately beneficial? So she switched from director of quality to director of engineering. So it felt like abandoning her community, but it expanded her sphere of influence, allowing her to affect quality at a deeper, more systemic level. I found that one very interesting, that kind of letting go of the word quality, and just, I say that in inverted commas, landing on engineering. But it was fascinating that she actually, it was beneficial in the end, even if it felt like she was abandoning her community. So yes, very interesting one.
Yep, relatable.
Yeah.
I definitely worked with other people who have been on a similar journey. So Dan Ashby springs to mind.
Yeah, I was thinking the same as well. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, folks, well, let's get some people up on stage. What we're going to do, we'll keep an eye out for people joining off stage. So if you haven't spotted it already, for those following along live, there is a Join the Stage Queue button. Once you press that, it will open a new tab. Close the tab that you come from just to avoid any duplicate audio issues. And then we will see your name pop up on our screen. And then we can bring you up on stage and find out about your week. Perhaps you might want to share some of the leadership challenges that you're facing or have faced recently, and maybe what you're working on as a leader. Could be some of the skills, techniques, anything that you've been up to, anything you've observed, anything you've read. Just go for it, right? This is an opportunity for us to find out about what you've been up to and share some things to continue the conversation. In the meantime, as we wait for folks to arrive backstage, there was a good post I added to the Observatory earlier on today. So the Observatory is our bookmarks page on ministrytesting.com, where we add bookmarks to anything cool that's happening in the world of tech. And I saw this post. Oh, and I can see Christine has joined. Christine, I'll bring you up on stage in one moment. I'm just going to finish what I was sharing about this. I'll quote some lines. So this blog post, it said, if I was your head of engineering, it lists lots of cool things. I'd bring developers closer to the business and the business closer to developers, making everyone, business and technical, active participants in defining and executing technology strategy, pursuit of meaningful aims. I like that. I'd invest heavily in knowledge and skills, process improvement, and automation to remove friction from software delivery and reduce lead times and accelerate business feedback, tying into helpful, valuable feedback that you and fast delivery that you were talking about, Ben. And I'd encourage developers to branch out, try new things, wear different hats, and gradually become more adaptable and confident generalizing specialists.
Interesting.
So yeah, it's worth checking out. It's a nice kind of reflection of an ambition for someone who would become head of engineering. So do go check that out on the Observatory. Christine, let's bring Christine Pinto up onto the stage.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. Christine, how has your week in quality been?
My week in quality was interesting, especially also my leading week in quality, because here in Berlin was Lead Dev, so a place where all the leaders in engineering are meeting, so the directors of engineering, head of engineering, and one of the next one, VP and CTOs and data. And that was very interesting because, yeah, I was part of a panel list there, the path to CTO. And it was very fascinating because exactly what we also talked about here and what you a little bit alluded to this as well, not so close to quality, more like leadership questions. But it's very interesting, like a couple of the things which I would love to also hear feedback is like one of the questions was, how much do you still code when you are in the upper higher? Like the higher you go, how much time do you actually spend still coding now for the people there, mainly, I guess, on the web application, but for us also on the test automation, or like how much time do you spend still on strategy? And that's still something where I'm not sure how people also do this, because I believe if you completely separate yourself from the technical part, you also separate yourself from all the new technology which has come up, especially now with all, like, it's literally every week I see a new thing about Claude Skills or MCPs or like, what are they? I forgot what I read. Like Anthropic is pumping out these features, which is incredible. Oh yeah, and Google had just an update for Notebook LM, which is so much technology stuff. And if you're not like need to focus or like are actually put into a phase that you have to like figure out a solution, how can you help your developers? How can you help your QAs also like figuring this out? So like this, like connect. I found like for me as in an early stage startup, I'm still programming a lot, but I know the more people we're going to onboard, because we had quite a lot of them in between, it's like I'm also going further away from programming, further away from test strategy and more like on the vision base. But I still believe it's important to China to connect a little bit to still that, because that's where we all started with like, or like most of us in like manual testing, test strategies and then test automation. And if you're like, I believe if you're too far to separate it, you also don't, you can't really put up these connections to your employees as well. And I think that's very important to feel like you should still show them you're connected to them, you care about them, even if you go higher up the chain.
Ben, go for it.
That is cool, Christine. I think it's a really interesting one. So let me throw two things out there, and I hope some of this is at least spicy enough to be interesting. One of them is, now as a lead QE, I find myself, I'm currently still doing plenty of code and plenty of testing. So I'm not at the height yet of giving that up, for better or for worse. And I really think that I agree that there are certain roles where you need to stay somewhat involved and invested in the team you're working with and their work and their success, because otherwise it's hard to see what they're doing and feel their pain. But I'm going to be spicy here, and I have to be careful how I word this. I also think there are times where, depending on the scale of the organization and the level of leadership, that especially the C-level leadership in growing small companies, there needs to be a point where they have built the trust in their engineering teams, where they step far enough back and they're not getting directly involved. Otherwise, you can easily become a bottleneck where decisions are still directly going through you, which then causes drag instead of leadership. So I think what's not trivial is finding where that inflection point is and switching from, yes, I will give you an answer, to, you've got this, you can do this without asking me. And I don't know where that point is, but maybe you have a better idea than me.
I completely agree to that point, because I also like, I've been to a lot of startups as well as enterprises as well. And I've seen in the startups and other startups I worked with where also the CTO was still much involved. You have to go a thin line. Hey, you still have to show that you trust, because yes, the first code is all developed from you most of the time, but you have to exactly show this, that you still trust them and you empower them. Hey, for me, it's also very important to show the vision. Like that's where we're going. And this is our problem and I trust you that you can solve that. I completely agree. And it is challenging because especially, yeah, like you said, it's like, where do you find this? Because I have to also say, it's still, it's like, I also enjoy coding. It's like, it's not that it's dragging me down, but I also love like to sometimes just be in front of the computer and just hack down. Or also like when it comes to really complicated problems, I love to solve them, but they take time. And like you said, you don't have that time the higher you go up. And I think it's, yeah, the trust thing is very important. I believe it has to be, I'm not sure that's my imagination still, like maybe once a week, a couple of hours, or once every 2 weeks, a couple of hours, I will just take one of the tickets and like solve it. Because yes, you said you cannot be a bottleneck. It's very bad if that happens because you've been too far out. But maybe I'm also thinking about pair programming, that I also see how my developers are still doing it as well, to see, okay, that's the flow, to also update my flow. Like I said, with all these tool changes, I also want to stay up to date of what's currently going on. And I think pair programming, pair testing helps with that as well.
Jesper has joined the stage. Thank you, Jesper, to get your take on.
Hello, everyone.
So jump on in.
Yeah, I was just actually just looking for a blog post by a favorite author of mine, Church Medius. Sure, she was at LeapDev Berlin, actually, if I remember correctly. She did a blog post a while back on what can managers do, and the thing that she saw that you can shift from being a manager going back to an individual contributor. So that aligns very well to what Christine just shared, that sometimes you want to move between the two, sometimes be in the manager position and sometimes not. Another great thing from that post, and I'll try to find it in a bit, is the consideration, what actually is like the core of the management skills she mentioned. I'm sure that perhaps management can only hire, fire, and perhaps do performance review is one line that stuck in my head. I would like obviously the chat to pitch in. From my point of view, many individual contributors can even participate in the hiring, we see that, but also do a lot of the things that traditionally would land on the management desk.
Wonderful, Jesper. Thank you for sharing that. And yeah, for those who are following along live right now, there isn't yet the option to share a link in the chat. So Jesper, if you get the chance, feel free to post as a memory on ministryoftesting.com or start a conversation, a new topic post on the club, and I guess an opportunity for folks to find that article and share their comments and share your hot take on it. Also in the Motiverse Slack for those who have access, as well as, yeah, in all the places is what I'm sharing. But yeah, thank you for joining, Jesper. Well, whilst you're here, Jesper, is there anything else you'd like to share that you've been up to?
Yeah, I was just revisiting the Leading with Quality Slack that's also available, and the topic of maturity models came up again. And it was actually also on a new podcast by Parveen and Suma that was highlighted on the Observatory and the Ministry of Testing front page a few days ago. Or I might have remembered incorrectly, sorry. It was on the Browser Stack podcast with Priyanka Halda. Anyways, the topic is in the chat on testing maturity models. And I've been around, I'm not so sure on the applicability of the testing maturity models, but apparently it still comes up every now and then.
I got it. Yeah, it was good to see that new podcast from Parveen and Suman. Yeah, it's good to see him. So I think if folks missed that one, because it did appear on the homepage, as you say, Jesper, things move pretty fast on the Ministry of Testing homepage these days. Think of an Oracle as like the BBC News website. So things change quite rapidly, not as fast as daily news, but pretty pacey. But if folks did miss it, they should be able to find it either via the Observatory or if someone jumps on, say, Parveen Khan's profile page, you'll see it attributed as a contribution. So folks can go check that out. Good stuff.
Jesper and Christine, I think I'd love to know your take on this. I'd love to know your thoughts on the difference between management and leadership, because I see the two as quite distinct things, and sometimes they're equated in many organizations or structures as being equivalent, and sometimes they're very different. And I come from that from point of view of trying to follow a individual contributor leadership track. So I'm currently in a lead level role, and I'd like to progress towards like staff and principal engineer roles where I'm not necessarily managing people, but I am intending to take up leadership responsibilities as I go. I'd love to know your take on that, on the difference between like management. It sounds, Jesper, from the definition that you were using there, that this particular conversation was talking about line management and people management and then leadership.
Yes, it's a very good distinction, Ben. And it's also a topic I've been exploring the last year or so on what happens next. What are the, at a certain point, you get to a point where you say, is there the only step with that for me? Is that into traditional line management, or is there another path? And we actually have great examples in the Ministry of Testing community of principal and staff level testers that we can mirror, and plenty of research also in that there is actually a space for staff level and, or high level individual contributors like yourself, Ben.
If I can take on this, so for me, like management and also people management is like maintaining a system and executing the plans, like basically that you ensure that you're doing things right. And leadership is what I said before, is for me a lot about creating visions and inspiring change. So doing the right things. So basically, is that for me, I believe with the right vision, you can like move so much and you can change so much. You need both, because it can also become very chaotic if you have an awesome vision but no management. I also believe it can be mixed, but I think the best thing is if it's two individuals, because somebody, it's also personality things, I believe as well. Some people are just better in also management of systems, management of people, versus inspiring people and leading them in the right direction, also inspiring them to do more by themselves or maybe level up as well. That's how I see that.
Fascinating. I wonder, Simon, if you have another one of your questions for us. I was enjoying those. It was time.
Yeah, let me, I just shut that tab that had them on there to keep things tidy, but one moment I will bring that back and we can grab another question. Here we go. Let's bring up that. Let's whiz through and get some more questions in the mixer. Right, where do we get to? So this was a good one from Matthew Whitaker's Leading with Quality conversation. Matthew Whitaker, who I think I saw a post from Matthew earlier on LinkedIn, actually, about Remembrance Sunday, as he used to be part of the army, which I didn't know. So it was cool to hear that. But Matthew says the following. Matthew Whitaker describes a spare QA on his team. What is the primary value of this role? A spare QA. Any thoughts?
I have some story time on this one, which I love. So that when I was at university, I took a year out to be an executive officer at my student union. So I was elected as education officer. So I took a year of my time out to do this. So it's like an advocacy role, representative role. And it frustrated me, because even then at university, even at a student's union, I was in a lot of meetings and expected to do a whole load of stuff. And there were often things that, because as a small group of student executives we were involved in, there were other things we couldn't do. And it made me think that we needed a role, which I liked the idea of calling a missed opportunities officer. So that would be effectively someone who was in that elected position that exists, only to take opportunities of things that they could do that the other people in the team basically couldn't take advantage of for some reason, because of the normal things that they were doing. And I'm wondering if this idea of a spare QA is the idea of someone who can get involved and join in with things when other people don't have the opportunity. So all those times you're like, oh, we'd love for someone to go, I don't know, get involved in refinement. but we're all too busy getting this release done. Oh, well, we'll send in our spare QA and they can come and join in with these extra things. I'm sure it might not be that, but I'd love it if it is.
No, I love the story. That's brilliant. It's like, I'm trying to think of what the acronym is. My brain isn't quick enough to work it out, but wouldn't it be cool if roll? Like, what's that an acronym? But anyway, yeah, I love that. Just like having that capacity to try out stuff where there's other constraints on other people and their roles. Like, I see some answers coming through in the chat. Christine, and you can expand on this if you wish on stage, say, sharing a professional skeptic and user champion. Okay, spare QA. Gary Hawks says they can move to cover peaks across projects. Gotcha. So yeah, Christine or Jesper, any thoughts on Matthew Whitaker describing a spare QA? What is the primary value of this role?
Yeah, I would like to step on what Ben said. And I think that's very interesting to do the things on the one side when there's no time. I think also to do the things, that's why I put it as a skeptic and user champion, to do the things most of the times people don't pay attention to. So for me, it's also in the direction representing the user perspective. Hey, when the team is already very deep in technical implementation, a spare QA can do these things like, okay, what is actually the user's perspective? Ask this like uncomfortable question, because in the end, we know we all build products for users, but we are sometimes just not always in that user perspective. And I have that spare QA. It can, A, I also like the peak in the situation, go to peak situations or do stuff we don't have time, but have also somebody to advocate for edge cases or integration points, or the user, or then the skeptic and asking exactly only these questions. I think that's a very incredible idea to have that, because it gives you a very unique point. You are seeing it more of a black box, which is also good because that's what the user is as well. So you don't have maybe sometimes that deep knowledge, which is good because then you ask simpler questions, I would say. You ask simpler questions, which can trigger so much also in the team. So I enjoy that. That sounds very awesome. Lone QA, spare QA. It's very cool.
Love it. I love your take on that, Christine. Very cool. Jesper, any thoughts?
Sounds great. Yeah, we should have a spare QA to pitch in.
Yeah. And AD Stokes offers, isn't a spare QA a tester who knocks the remaining pins, in brackets, bugs down? Love it. It's all strikes and gutters, AD. Thank you, Ben. Okay. Oh, Scout Burkhart. Oh, good to hear from you, Scout. Scout shares, I do this in my role. Sometimes I'm all busy with testing. Sometimes I do quality planning, but I also help out with server maintenance, internal systems, whatever comes up. Not always fun stuff, though, like organizing.
Not necessarily like glue work, which is a separate discussion, but getting the things, being around for, as Scout mentions. And what I love about this community is, this is not just Christine and me thinking up this could happen. We actually have people participating, saying, this is what I do. These are things that are actually happening.
Yeah, I love it. It's real, right? This is the power of our social learning that we are all part of by being part of something such as This Week in Quality. It's real stories, real experiences. It's not none of this theory stuff. This is happening. So I can share the answer, or at least the reflection of this question. So the spare QA is this person, often with deep business knowledge, moves between teams as needed, balancing resources and spreading product knowledge. There you go. So that's another lens or take on what a spare QA does, and of course could do if folks have the opportunity to have a spare QA on their team. And Richard Adams shares, whilst defining a role, I became a free-range tester. Love it, Richard. It's a great term.
Yeah.
Roam around.
The reference of uncaged free-range. Love that.
I love it. Brilliant. Okay, folks. Well, just doing a quick time check. We've got just over 5 minutes before we wrap things up today. For those who are on stage, any other thoughts or reflections? Maybe you've had a look at some of the Leading with Quality conversations, or you've been part of some kind of recent workshops around Leading with Quality. Is there anything that's jumping out that you feel, maybe this is relevant to what we've been talking about, or perhaps opportunity within the short time we have to fire up another topic that you feel is important right now?
I think what's important, I think the conversation we showed today is to share what you experience as a leader, but also listen what other people share. So the series Rosie is doing is very cool because, yes, all companies are different, but in the end, we all deal with people, we all deal with relationships, and we deal with technology around us as well, and users, depending most of the times for the product as well. So it's always interesting how people work with these challenges. And only if you like share this, or if you really pay attention, like really put the effort in and listen to this and learn this, you can evolve in this as well, because we are all evolving. Like, we all want to be better leaders. It's just what it is. We want to lead people. We want to bring them to their, like, I want to get the most out of my people I'm leading, because I also want them to see succeed. I want them to succeed, to also be leaders. And to do this, it just also helps to share with other people, to have that space and ask exactly these questions, what you did today. So I find that very cool. Thank you.
That was very well put. Thank you, Christine.
Yeah, I'm loving that, Christine. Share and listen.
It makes me think of the, what's the, it's like a flip of the two words where it's like we have to learn to share and then we share to learn. Like, you keep going around a little loop of those two things. Certainly we noticed that for a lot of community members, that the more they put out there, they're like forcing themselves to learn something in the process, the act of sharing, because they're clarifying their own thoughts and experiences, putting something that's in their head either onto paper or onto a talk or audio podcast. And then once they've expressed it into the world, it's like, oh yeah, I can reflect on that now and others can benefit from it. So it's a learning process. By sharing.
Sometimes it might be a hurdle to, oh, should I start a blog? But I'm sure we can just go to the Ministry of Testing page and the contribute section and find whatever format you prefer.
Absolutely. And we very much appreciate it. It can be quite overwhelming for folks who are new to the Motiverse and ministryoftesting.com. My recommendation to folks who are listening today that are new is ease yourself into it. There are many things you can do. Collections is one interesting way to dive into stuff that's happening in the Motiverse. So we curate collections. So we've got the Community's Guide to Quality Engineering, for example, and that is like talks that are on the site, articles. It could be some memory posts that people are sharing that are related to quality engineering. It could also be blog posts from across the internet that we pull in and collect and curate as collections. And folks can also create their own collection. You could think of it as like a to-do list of things that you're going to go check out, and you can slowly but surely work your way through those collections. I know a bit of insider info. We had a chat earlier this week thinking about, maybe we could make collections so you can view it like a checklist, and you can mark that you read something or that you've had a look at that, and you can share some thoughts, and there's a way to visually display that. But that's another of the many feature ideas that are on the backlog at Ministry of Testing. We are a small team and we're trying our very best to keep pace and deliver value as often as we possibly can.
Very cool. If you could indulge me with a final reflection, it would be this, which is, as you are doing all of these awesome things, whether it's being a free-range tester, being a manager or a leader, or joining the stage here this week in quality, or joining the chat, remember, while you are at your day jobs and while you are contributing to the community, while you're consuming from the community, to make a record of the fantastic things you do, the way that you do them, and the impact that you have while you're doing them, so that it can help count towards your personal and career development, and ultimately help you get your next role or your next job. It all counts, folks.
Wonderful advice, Ben. Thank you for sharing that. And just to call out, I forgot to mention, thanks for the prompt, AD Stokes in the chat. He says, I just made a collection on portfolios to support certificates. Yeah, so there's a really, I think it's, and I'm not looking it up, just from memory, about 10 or 11 items about building your portfolios, amplifying what you're sharing there, Ben. So folks can go check that out on the collections page, and maybe I can share a link in the Motiverse Slack after we finish this session. Great. So final link I will share for those who want to talk more about leadership, many ways to do that. But one way is to join the Leading with Quality Lean Coffee. So that's happening on Wednesday, the 26th of November. 6 to 7 p.m. GMT. So come along. If you're unfamiliar with a Lean Coffee, I guess it's an unstructured meeting format, where we get to choose the topics at the start. We spend about 8 or so minutes on each topic, and then we vote to keep the chat going or to move on to the next topic. So it's a nice way. It's agendaless. People can bring their topics to the conversation, and then we can explore all things Leading with Quality. So do check out that event. It's also available on the events page. So ministryoftesting.com/events. There's always stuff going on. There's plenty more this week in qualities to get involved with and enjoy the conversation. So please do keep coming back, spread the word, share this with your team. If they've not come to this week in quality, we'd love for them to participate and get stuck in. We're all here to support each other and help out and to see what's possible. Keep turning up, folks, is what I'm saying. Brilliant. Okay, so thank you so much, Ben, for co-hosting. It's been a pleasure as always. Thank you to those that are joining the stage today. Lovely to hear from you, Jesper and Christine. And yeah, for everyone who's joined along live, grateful for all the conversation and the chat. It's been lovely to see that all coming in, hopefully sparking more ideas. Please do post on the club, post a memory, some of your reflections from today's episode. And yeah, thank you, dear listener, for coming back to the podcast. We appreciate it. Okay, folks, signing off. Please do enjoy the rest of your day, and we'll speak to you all soon. Bye for now.